We hear this story in many forms, but the strategy is always the same. There are people who do great work around you every day. When you care, show it. Don't hesitate or put it off until next week. Do something this week or even today. Things as simple as a greeting card or something else inexpensive yet meaningful that sums up how you feel are all you need to make an impact and strengthen a relationship. Relationship Management Strategy Number 13. Explain your decisions, don't just make them. It's frightening to be in a place you're not familiar with and be completely in the dark. Case in point, have you ever planned to go camping but got to the site in the dark? It's hard to get your bearings. You're setting up a tent in the dark, and because you're in the wilderness, it's just eerily quiet and black. You go to bed with one eye open and hope for the best. The next day, you wake up tired and unzip your tent, and you're amazed at the beauty around you. Water, mountains, tree-lined trails, and cute little animals abound. There's nothing to be afraid of. You soon forget last night's anxieties, and you move about your day. What were you so worried about anyway? The only difference between these two scenarios is light. It's the same place, and you're with the same people with the same gear. This is what people experience when decisions are made for them. When you're in the dark, intentionally or not, about upcoming layoffs, contract negotiations, and the like, you may as well be setting up camp in blackness. If there are layoffs that increase your workload or change your shift, you'll find out when the pink slips are handed out. If taxes are changed, you'll see it on your paycheck. No recourse, no trial period. It's a done deal. That's a tough pill to swallow because we're not children or dependents. We're adults. To support an idea, we need to understand why the decision was made. When you use your EQ to manage relationships, keep this in mind. Instead of making a change and expecting others to just accept it, take time to explain the why behind the decision, including alternatives, and why the final choice made the most sense. If you can ask for ideas and input ahead of time, it's even better. Finally, acknowledge how the decision will affect everyone. People appreciate this transparency and openness, even though the decision may negatively impact them. Transparency and openness also make people feel like they are trusted, respected, and connected to their organization instead of being told what to do and kept in the dark. If you have a habit of making decisions quickly and independently, you're likely very personally competent. Though old habits die hard, since they're ingrained in your brain's wiring, it's time to rewire and add social competence to your decision-making repertoire. First, you'll likely have to spot your upcoming decisions. Take out your calendar to look over the next 3 months to identify which decisions will need to be made by then. Now work backward and see who will be impacted by these decisions. Make a complete list of who will be affected by each decision and plan on when and where you will talk together about each, including the details that explain why and how each decision will be made. If you have to invite people to a special meeting for just this purpose, so be it. As you plan your agenda and your words, use your social awareness skills to put yourself in the shoes of others so you can speak to your audience before and after you make the decision as they would expect and hope. Relationship Management Strategy Number 14. Make your feedback direct and constructive. Think about the best feedback you ever received. It wasn't something you necessarily wanted or expected, but it made a difference in your behavior going forward. The feedback may have shaped your overall performance or how you deal with a particular situation or even your career. What made the feedback so good? If you're responsible for giving feedback, there are several guidebooks to walk you through the process, making sure it's within legal and human resources guidelines. Sit down. We have some news. Following legal guidelines isn't what makes feedback a performance or person-changing experience. Infusing EQ know-how into your feedback, though, is what does. Here's how to think about feedback and EQ. Giving feedback is a relationship-building event that requires all four EQ skills to be effective. Use your self-awareness skills to identify your feelings about the feedback. Are you comfortable with the process? Why or why not? Next, use your self-management skills to decide what you'll do with the information you just learned about yourself from answering the above questions. For example, if you're anxious about giving feedback about phone etiquette because you don't want people to think you're eavesdropping, how exactly are you going to get beyond this anxiety to confidently give feedback? It's up to you, but don't ignore the feedback because of your discomfort. Next, use your social awareness skills to think of the person who's receiving the feedback. Remember, feedback is meant to address the problem, not the person. How does the person need to hear your message so it's clear, direct, constructive, and respectful? Constructive feedback has two parts: sharing your opinion and offering solutions for change. Let's take Todd. He's very direct. Sugarcoating his need to make phone etiquette improvements will insult him. But if sugarcoating hard news is in his improvement plan, consider sharing feedback with and without the sugar so he can hear the difference and learn from it. Jenny, on the other hand, is sensitive. Since this is a relationship-building experience, keep Jenny in mind when planning her feedback. Using softeners such as "I think," or "I believe," or "this time" to begin a statement may soften the blow. Instead of "your report is terrible," use "I believe there are parts of your report that could use revisions. May I walk you through some suggestions?" Here, offering suggestions for improvement is helpful, not prescriptive. At the end, ask the person for his or her thoughts and thank the person for his or her willingness to consider your suggestions. Relationship Management Strategy Number 15. Align your intention with your impact. Let's say you're in a staff meeting and the next topic on the agenda is to figure out why some key deadlines are being missed. After some back and forth, it's looking like Anna might be partially to blame and the room is getting tense. In an honest attempt to lighten the mood, you say something like, "Geez, Anna, looks like maybe taking those longer lunches is finally catching up to you." Instead of laughs, there's dead silence. You don't understand what you did wrong, and you later tell Anna, "I was only kidding," but she seems put off. These are the famous last words of someone who had good intentions, but the result or impact was not aligned, and it's too late. Or think about the results-driven manager who has good intentions about guiding her staff toward achieving higher goals. She's so focused on success that she becomes entrenched in the work, doing most of it herself, or pushing everyone to do it her way, completely missing how to manage the work through others. Her staff deems her a hard-driving micromanager who doesn't share knowledge, and all she intended was for the team to learn from her and be successful. Yet again, intentions were good, but they had the opposite impact. Relationships are now tarnished, and the manager can't figure out why her staff resents her. If you find that you spend time smoothing things over to repair a relationship, or you're unsure about what's going wrong in your relationships, know that these situations are avoidable. With the help of your awareness and management skills, making small adjustments will make all the difference. To align your words and actions with your intent, you need to use your social awareness and self-management skills to observe the situation and the people in it. Think before you speak or act, and make an appropriate and sensitive response. Do a quick analysis. Think of a situation where the impact of what you said or did was not what you intended. On a piece of paper, describe the incident, your intentions, your actions, and the impact, the end result or reaction of others. Next, write what you didn't realize in the situation, and fill in what you understand now in hindsight, including missed cues, what you learned about yourself and others. Finally, answer what you could have done differently to keep your intent and impact aligned. If you're not sure, ask someone who was involved in the situation. In Anna's case, you didn't realize it was the wrong moment for that joke. It singled her out publicly. Next time, you'll lighten the mood by poking fun at yourself, not someone else. The results-driven manager didn't realize what motivated her staff members. She didn't give them space and time to learn and grow on their own. To better manage your relationships, it's critical to spot misalignments before you act so that your actions match your impact with your good intentions. Relationship management strategy number 16. Offer a fix-it statement during a broken conversation. Airline agents. They are often the bearer of unavoidably bad news in person. Weather delays, delays due to mechanical repairs, lost luggage, overbooking, the list goes on and on. Airline agents attempt to repair your broken experience with fix-its or tools, like rebooking and vouchers, to problem-solve and address the ultimate goal to get you to your destination. It's probably safe to assume that we've all had conversations where we could use a fix-it. A simple discussion breaks into a disagreement or gets stuck going around in circles. In these broken conversations, past mistakes may get brought to the surface. Regretful comments are made and blame is present. No matter who said what or who started it, it's time to refocus and fix it. Someone needs to step back, quickly assess the situation, and begin repairing the conversation with a fix-it. To do this, you need to let go of blame and focus on the repair. Do you want to be right, or do you want a resolution? Use your self-awareness skills to see what you are contributing to the situation. Self-manage to put your tendencies aside and choose the high road. Your social awareness skills can help you identify what the other person brought to the table or feels. Looking at both sides will help you figure out where the interaction broke down and which fix-it statement is needed to begin the repairs. Fix-it statements feel like a breath of fresh air, are neutral in tone, and find common ground. A fix-it statement can be as simple as saying, "This is hard," or asking how the person is feeling. Most conversations can benefit from a fix-it, and it won't do any harm if you feel the conversation breaking down. This strategy will help you maintain open lines of communication when you're upset, and with conscious effort and practice, you'll be able to fix your broken conversations before they become damaged beyond repair. Relationship management strategy number 17. Tackle a tough conversation. "Why did I get passed over for the promotion?" your staff member Judith asks, with a slightly defensive tone, a wounded posture, and a quivering voice. This is going to be a tough one. The news leaked out early about Roger's promotion before you could speak with Judith. You value Judith and her work, but you'll need to explain that she's not ready for the next level yet. That's not the hardest part of this conversation. Damage control is another story. From the boardroom to the break room, tough conversations will surface, and it's possible to calmly and effectively handle them. Tough conversations are inevitable. Forget running from them because they're sure to catch up to you. Though EQ skills can't make these conversations disappear, acquiring some new skills can make these conversations a lot easier to navigate without ruining the relationship. 1. Start with agreement. If you know you're likely to end up in a disagreement, start your discussion with the common ground you share. Whether it's simply agreeing that the discussion will be hard but important, or agreeing on a shared goal, create a feeling of agreement. For example, "Judith, I first want you to know that I value you, and I'm sorry that you learned the news from someone other than me. I'd like to use this time to explain the situation, and anything else you'd like to hear from me, I'd also like to hear from you." 2. Ask the person to help you understand his or her side. People want to be heard. If they don't feel heard, frustration rises. Before frustration enters the picture, beat it to the punch and ask the person to share his or her point of view. Manage your own feelings as needed, but focus on understanding the other person's view. In Judith's case, this would sound like, "Judith, along the way, I want to make sure you feel comfortable sharing what's on your mind with me. I'd like to make sure I understand your perspective." By asking for Judith's input, you're showing that you care and have an interest in learning more about her. This is an opportunity to deepen and manage your relationship with Judith. 3. Resist the urge to plan a comeback or a rebuttal. Your brain cannot listen well and prepare to speak at the same time. Use your self-management skills to silence your inner voice and direct your attention to the person in front of you. In this case, Judith has been passed up for a promotion that she was really interested in and found out about it through the grapevine. Let's face it, if you'd like to maintain the relationship, you need to be quiet, listen to her shock and disappointment, and resist the urge to defend yourself. 4. Help the other person understand your side, too. Now it is your turn to help the other person understand your perspective. Describe your discomfort, your thoughts, your ideas, and the reasons behind your thought process. Communicate clearly and simply. Don't speak in circles or in code. In Judith's case, what you say can ultimately be great feedback for her, which she deserves. To explain that Roger had more experience and was more suited for the job at this time is an appropriate message. Since his promotion was leaked to her in an unsavory way, this is something that requires an apology. This ability to explain your thoughts and directly address others in a compassionate way during a difficult situation is a key aspect of relationship management. 5. Move the conversation forward. Once you understand each other's perspective, even if there's disagreement, someone has to move things along. In the case of Judith, it's you. Try to find some common ground again. When you're talking to Judith, say something like, "Well, I'm so glad you came to me directly and that we had the opportunity to talk about it. I understand your position and it sounds like you understand mine. I'm still invested in your development and would like to work with you on getting the experience you need. What are your thoughts?" 6. Keep in touch. The resolution to a tough conversation needs more attention even after you leave it. So check progress frequently, ask the other person if he or she is satisfied, and keep in touch as you move forward. You are half of what it takes to keep a relationship oiled and running smoothly. In regard to Judith, meeting with her regularly to talk about her career advancement and promotion potential would continue to show her that you care about her progress. In the end, when you enter a tough conversation, prepare yourself to take the high road, not be defensive, and remain open by practicing the strategies above. Instead of losing ground with someone in a conversation like this, it can actually become a moment that solidifies your relationship going forward. Epilogue. Just the facts. A look at the latest discoveries in emotional intelligence. When TalentSmart, registered trademark, released the emotional intelligence appraisal, EQ was still taking root in the minds of business leaders, other professionals, and anyone who simply wanted to lead a happier and healthier life. By measuring their EQ and showing them how to improve in one swoop, the emotional intelligence appraisal quickly became the vehicle that enabled people to turn their newfound emotional mastery into strengthened relationships, better decisions, stronger leadership, and ultimately more successful organizations. At TalentSmart, we've watched hundreds of thousands of people from the top to the bottom of organizations take the journey to higher EQ. The field of EQ skill development has truly blossomed since then, and we've taken special interest in tracking the changing landscape all along the way. What we've found in our studies has sometimes startled and often encouraged us. What remains constant throughout our discoveries is the vitally important role EQ skills play in the quest to lead a happy, healthy, and productive personal and professional life. More specifically, our research sheds new light on the battle of the sexes, the generational divide, the quest for career advancement and higher-paying jobs, as well as cluing us in on which countries are primed for future success in an increasingly global economy. All offer hope for those looking to increase their EQ skills. Here's what we found. The poles are melting, EQ then and now. At the end of 2008, we took a good look at how the collective EQ of the U.S. population had changed since 2003. While we weren't surprised to see those we tested and taught improve their EQ, we were intrigued to watch the EQ scores of newbies increase with each passing year. And the increase continued, year after year after year. The EQ scores of those we'd never tested or taught made a slow and steady climb from 75 to 79. We discovered a substantial increase in the emotional intelligence of the U.S. workforce between 2003 and 2007. Skeptics might be tempted to think, what's the big deal? That's just a 4-point increase in 5 years. But think of the impact a seemingly small temperature increase, say 1 or 2 degrees, has upon our ecosystem. The same is true with human behavior in the workplace, where the frozen poles of low emotional intelligence are starting to melt. Once we take a closer look at the specific changes the broad gains in EQ have created, the real power of the transformation comes to light. In the last 5 years, we've seen the percentage of people who are highly attuned to their own emotions and to the emotions of other people rise from 13.7% to 18.3%. During that same period, the percentage of people with a poor understanding of how anxiety, frustration, and anger influence their behavior has dropped from 31% to 14%. When you apply these proportions to the 180 million people in America's workforce, it means that 9 million more people today than in 2003 almost always keep their cool during heated conflicts. 9 million more people actually show that they care about their coworkers and customers when they suffer hard times. And 25 million fewer people are painfully oblivious to the impact their behavior has on others. What makes this discovery so special is that prior to taking the test, very few, if any, of the people in our sample had ever received formal emotional intelligence training. Yet their average EQ scores steadily increased from year to year. It's as if the people who intentionally practice emotionally intelligent behaviors are infecting others who may have never even heard of the concept. Emotional intelligence skills, much like emotions themselves, are contagious. That means that our EQ skills are highly dependent on the surrounding people and circumstances. The more we interact with empathetic people, the more empathetic we become. The more time we spend with other people who openly discuss emotions, the more skilled we become at identifying and understanding emotions. That is precisely what makes emotional intelligence a learned skill rather than some unalterable trait bestowed only upon a lucky few at birth. But that's where the good times end. In 2008, for the first time since we began tracking it, collective emotional intelligence dropped, underscoring just how susceptible to change these skills truly are. Federal economists pinpointed December 2007 as the start of the United States' worst economy in 70 years, which means that 2008 did not see a single day without recession. The relapse in emotional intelligence skills between 2007 and 2008 is the product of economic woes. Hard times of any kind, financial, familial, or job-related, create more intense and often prolonged negative emotions that ultimately result in stress. In addition to the physical costs of stress, such as weight gain and heart disease, stress also taxes our mental resources. Under stress-free conditions, we can consciously devote extra effort to staying calm and collected during the trials and tribulations of everyday life. We are more confident in our abilities to handle unexpected events, and we allow our minds to overcome troublesome matters. Unmanaged stress, however, consumes much of those mental resources. It reduces our minds to something like a state of martial law, in which emotions single-handedly dictate behavior, while our rational capacities are busy trying to turn lemons into lemonade. Suddenly, a little setback in your project at work that would have been no big deal in relatively prosperous times feels more like a catastrophe than a minor nuisance. For many people, their EQ skills desert them at precisely the time when they need these skills the most, under stress. Only those with well-trained and almost second-nature EQ skills can effectively weather the storm. This stress seems to be having a significant impact on our collective emotional intelligence. We went from 18.3% of people being highly skilled in emotional intelligence in 2007 to only 16.7% in 2008. In other words, we lost 2.8 million highly skilled soldiers in the battle for a more emotionally intelligent society. That is 2.8 million people who could have been guideposts showing others the way to more emotionally intelligent behaviors, but are instead struggling to keep their own skills sharp. The battle of the sexes, EQ and gender. Sheila began her career as a financial consultant specializing in healthcare at a multinational consulting firm. It only took a few years of dazzling clients and garnering rave reviews from upper management before she was eventually snatched up by her current employer, a large regional healthcare system in the Midwest. Still in her early 30s, Sheila is already an assistant vice president on the fast track to a C-level appointment. Her past and current superiors unanimously agree that Sheila is smart. Yet there's something else, something they can't quite put a finger on. Early in Sheila's consulting career, after watching her diffuse tense situations with clients time and again, her former manager summed up the secret to Sheila's success. She just gets people. In 2003, we found some stark contrast between the EQ skills expressed by men and those found in women like Sheila. Women outperformed men in self-management, social awareness, and relationship management. In fact, self-awareness was the only EQ skill in which men were able to keep pace with women. But times have changed, and so have men. Men and women are still neck and neck in their ability to recognize their own emotions, just as in 2003. But men have caught up in their ability to manage their own emotions. Chalk this change up to nothing more than shifting social norms. This evolution of cultural mores benefits men. Men are now encouraged to pay their emotions some extra thought, which goes a long way toward clearer thinking. Not surprisingly, we found that a full 70% of male leaders who rank in the top 15% in decision-making skills also score the highest in emotional intelligence skills. In contrast, not one single male leader with low EQ was among the most skilled decision makers. Although this seems counterintuitive, it turns out that paying attention to your emotions is the most logical way to make good decisions. So instead of feeling like time spent addressing angst or frustration is somehow a sign of weakness, men are now free to get a stronger handle on their emotions in the name of sound judgment. It's lonely at the top. Considering the mountains of literature about EQ, you'd think corporate executives would be pretty smart about it. As we revealed in our Harvard Business Review article, Heartless Bosses, our research shows that the message still isn't getting through. We have measured EQ in 500,000 senior executives, including 1,000 CEOs, managers, and line employees across industries on 6 continents. Scores climb with titles, from the bottom of the corporate ladder upward toward middle management. Middle managers stand out with the highest EQ scores in the workforce. But up beyond middle management, there is a steep downward trend in EQ scores. For the titles of director and above, scores descend faster than a snowboarder on a black diamond. CEOs, on average, have the lowest EQ scores in the workplace. A leader's primary function is to get work done through people. You might think, then, that the higher the position, the better the people skills. It appears the opposite is true. Too many leaders are promoted because of what they know or how long they have worked, rather than for their skill in managing others. Once they reach the top, they actually spend less time interacting with staff. Yet among executives, those with the highest EQ scores are the best performers. We've found that EQ skills are more important to job performance than any other leadership skill. The same holds true for every job title. Those with the highest EQ scores within any position outperform their peers. The generational divide, EQ and age. The mass exodus of baby boomers from the workplace has already begun. According to the U.S. Office of Personnel Management, between 2006 and 2010, boomer retirement will have robbed American companies of nearly 290,000 full-time experienced employees. Silver hair, pension funds, and personal memories of the Kennedy assassinations are not the only things our struggling economic engine will lose when boomers settle into the quiet life. Boomers hold the majority of top leadership roles in the workplace, and their retirement creates a leadership gap that must be filled by the next generations. The question is whether or not the boomers' successors are up to the challenge. We wanted to find out. We broke EQ scores down into the 4 generations in today's workplace: Generation Y, 18 to 30 years old; Generation X, 31 to 43 years old, baby boomers, 43 to 61 years old, and traditionalists, 62 to 80 years old. When we looked at each